I know how intimidating beekeeping can be, especially in those first couple of years, and not knowing what you need, what to do, or where to find help can be downright scary. That's why I created the AI-assisted Beekeeping for Newbies mobile app to be right there with you as you start your beekeeping journey. Loaded up with checklists, guides, and one of my favorites, a bunch of queen bee photos to help you get better at locating them during inspections. I created this app to provide you with a single source to help jumpstart your learning and make you a better beekeeper. Go to studio.com/beekeeper. That's studio.com/beekeeper to take advantage of a limited time 20% off launch special. Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies, episode 16. This is Jeff, and thank you so much for taking the time to tune in today. As always, if you have any questions, don't hesitate to drop me an email, jeff@beekeepingfornewbies.com. You know, my goal is to provide you with the absolutely most relevant, accurate, useful information possible. And if there's something you need, by all means, let me know. So I am broadcasting live today from the apiary. I have the windows open in the RV. It is kind of humid, but that's still better than having the generator on. I can hear the birds chirping in the back, so that's pretty cool and exciting. I think you can hear them coming in through the mic as well, but can't do much about that. But it's great to be here enjoying it, even though it's humid and muggy and raining and all of that. So I want to jump in and talk about what's new and what's been going on, as well as talking about some emails I've got from listeners. Now, if you remember, I guess it was a few weeks back, I had received an email from Jesse asking about mice and kind of how we address issues with mice in the colonies. You know, I had told him before, and I'll just kind of bring it up again in case somebody hasn't listened to that episode. You know, I have not had issues with mice in any of my colonies ever. I think I really attribute that to mostly being kind of a suburban beekeeper. I believe this may be more of an issue out here in a rural area. And what I had told him and everybody, you know, on the podcast was to go ahead and get some hardware cloth and to fabricate one from that. I kind of described it, but in order to kind of just give a visual, I took a video today. It's only like a 38-second video, but it shows the mouse guard and what it looks like. I posted that. You know, it's cheap, it's easy to do, and it's, you know, you don't have to go, you know, pay somebody money for something that you can do on your own. And I took a look at it, and it was, you know, the full width of the bottom board. And it was 3 inches high. So I just kind of bent it right at about the 1.5 inch point. So that'd be a good thing to check out if you're interested in that. I'm also going to be doing a video here shortly on a vented top. I started kind of gathering my thoughts on, you know, things around cooling the bees and challenges that you face in the summertime with, you know, excessive heat and what you can do to help out with that. And I came across this a couple of years ago. I mean, it's probably more like 6 or 7 years ago. I was trying to figure out like tips and tricks for overwintering. I had lost something like, I think that year I lost like 4 out of 5 colonies, and I just didn't understand. I was probably 3 years into beekeeping. I had no mentor. I just, you know, like I told you before, I just did it myself. And I was trying to figure out why I kept losing, you know, all these colonies over the winter. I remember opening one in like March, April timeframe, and it was completely soaking wet. There was mildew on the inner cover. It was pretty gross. And I kind of was searching around trying to figure out, you know, what's the problem? Like, why was there so much moisture in here? And I'm definitely going to talk about this in much greater detail when we get into winterization, but I am going to create a video talking about this vented top cover, because I've been using them for years. I've had tremendous success with them. They're easy to make if you want to make one. There's only one company I found online that sold the one that I'm going to show you. I really like it. I'll try and track down an old receipt from them. I just make my own now, but it's pretty cool and it's definitely worth looking at. Next is a couple of listener emails I'm going to run through. The first one is a gentleman who's local to me. He reached out and kind of told me where he was living. He was like, hey, I've got a couple of colonies. You know, some of them, I think he said he had 3. 2 of them are really strong. Thinking about doing some splits. Was asking about, you know, my feedback. He was really concerned about being able to find drones in his area to, you know, to mate with the Virgin Queen. Just kind of was looking for some thoughts and ideas around it. My personal feeling, you know, and again, there's a lot you can do with beehives. I mean, people will tell you, you know, if you look at some of the old school beekeepers and things, you know, that one saying, you know, most problems in a beehive can be solved by either adding something or taking something away. There's always a way to figure something out if you really want to do it or you want to make it happen. But there are certain things that just work really, really well or much, much better under a given set of circumstances. And what I mean specifically is think about the time of year when bees are swarming. You've got a big nectar flow. You've got tons of pollen and nectar coming into the hive. And now they're making queen cells. They've got tons of resources and they're making, you know, nice, big, healthy queens. Like, that's the ideal scenario. At this time of year, particularly where I am, as we go into, you know, mid-June, our pollen's pretty much drying up. We're not going to see much of anything, really, I would say, until early to mid-August. So we have almost 2 months where all of our colonies have to survive off of whatever they gathered in the spring. And hopefully the fall nectar flow is enough to get them through, you know, through the winter, which typically, in my experience, is not without some level of supplemental feeding. So I very, very rarely will attempt to do a split this late in the year or this late in the season unless I'm from day one planning to supplemental feed. That's the real trick. As long as they've got access to the nectar and some pollen substitute, or they're still getting pollen from somewhere, that they'll be okay. They can still make an emergency queen cell. Of course, we've already talked about it several times around the challenges with that, right? You're 40 to 45 days probably from when the egg that is going to become the queen is laid to when you have your first new worker is basically about 6 weeks. You know, 6 weeks of literally nothing new coming into the colony. So we've talked about how disruptive that can be and some of the challenges with that. But if you are providing enough nurse bees and you're providing all the resources they need, they can continue to make a new queen and they can continue to have that queen, you know, raising more brood. The colony will raise more brood if they have all the resources they need. It's just not as easy as it is during the flow. So my general advice is if you have a colony that's good, strong, and healthy right now, great. Make sure it has plenty of space and room and kind of lock it down. You may even want to start supplemental feeding a little bit just to keep them, you know, fed through the dearth and just be happy to have a living, you know, healthy colony. Now, that being said, like I said, I'm getting ready to do some queen rearing myself. It's not because I particularly want to. It's more out of necessity than out of, you know, it's not an elective decision like, hey, why don't we just raise some queens now? I'm really in a bind because of my situation with that agreement that has not quite worked out. So I'm going to be doing it, but again, just as long as you're on top of things and you're paying attention and you're giving them all the resources they need, they can still produce queens and still produce a viable colony that can overwinter. Yeah, you still have enough time. Now, the specific thing that this gentleman, Wes, and I had discussed was the challenges around finding drones in his area, though. He was concerned that, you know, he's a few miles away from what he knows to be the nearest other beekeeper. He wants that genetic diversity to make sure that, you know, you don't have inbred, you know, your queen's drones breeding with your virgin queens and trying to do the right thing with that, which makes a lot of sense. Now, what I would say, my recommendation would be maybe not now necessarily, but maybe in the spring, you know, give it a shot. Try and see if you just do an emergency split, maybe like in the early to mid-May timeframe, and see what they come up with, you know, see how the queen comes back. See if she's able to, you know, produce good brood and if she's healthy and all those things. That it's worth trying. But I think in this case, you know, I told Wes, I said, you know, I'm doing some stuff with queens anyway for the next couple of weeks. And I'll just go ahead and, you know, once I get a queen mated, I'll put her in a little mating nuke. I've got these little styrofoam mating nukes that are about like 10, 12 inches long, 6 inches high, 6 inches wide. There's like three miniature little frames in them. You put some sugar syrup in there, the three miniature frames, like a cup of bees and a queen cell. Queen hatches from the queen cell. She leaves, gets mated, comes back. And you look at the colony like in about 2 weeks and you just see, you know, nothing but brood inside that little miniature three frame nuke and you've got a mated queen. So we'll see if we can get that going and help him out. The next question I have is on entrance reducers. And, you know, I had mentioned it in the last episode, and I think someone wanted to kind of follow up with some more questions on that. So this can be a bit of a like religious topic with some people, and they get a little bent out of shape on it. What I would say is the majority of the decisions that you make with regard to your colonies are probably just going to be, it's going to come down to something really simple, and it's just how strong is your colony. If you have a really strong colony with good numbers, good population, lots of activity, you can leave the entrance completely open and they're going to be fine. If you have a small nuke, a two-frame nuke, two, three, four, five-frame nuke, and it's a new split or it's a new, colony, they may not have as many resources as would be needed to defend. And again, some of that's time of year based too, right? In the spring, when there's a good flow on, you don't have issues with robbing typically because there's plenty of nectar in the environment. The bees don't have to take unnecessary risks going in and trying to steal from another colony because there's plenty out there for them to get, within the environment. It's these times of year that we're about to go into where things can get tricky because your smaller, weaker colonies can become targets for the bigger, stronger ones. Typically what I do almost year round is if you buy an entrance reducer, that's fine. They usually have like a 3/4 inch or a 1 inch opening. And then if you flip it a little bit, you can get to like a 3 inch opening. I like that 3 inch opening year round. That just seems to work well. And that's what I run with. If I'm using like a two frame nuke or any other kind of nuke, I go to about an inch, inch and a half, and that's it. They don't need any more space than that. The bees will find a way to get in and out. They're very efficient. They're very effective at what they do. So don't get too, bent out of shape, because some people will just get so like, oh, you got to give them all kinds of space. They need to be able to move in and out. You're going to reduce their productivity. Now they're going to figure it out. They're going to be fine. Give them a little bit of space. Make it easier for them to defend, right? I mean, if you have particularly these smaller colonies, they just need, like I said, 3/4 inch. They just need enough room to get, two bees wide, basically. You got room for some coming in, room for some going out. So don't overthink it. And like I was talking about too, right, when speaking about the strength of the colonies and things like that, that's why I recommend people buy two at a time or maybe even three. I mean, I've had colonies that literally sit side by side, a foot and a half, 2 feet apart. One of them is active. Everything is going great. It's just insane what's going on. The one to the other side, it's just sort of okay. And if I was rating them, maybe one would be like a 4 or a 5 and the other one's like a 9 or a 10. Side by side, same environment, same conditions. And one of them just has a queen that has just much better genetics. Or, I mean, obviously there could be something that got into the colony that negatively impacted them. But in general, it's not unusual to see different activity, different behavior across different colonies, which is why I think it's always nice to have multiples. But it's also important to remember too, like that we as the beekeepers, we have a responsibility then to do what's right for them. And quite often we have this idea in our mind. I know I'm guilty of it over and over again, so I'm not picking on anybody. But where we think, I want to go ahead and split this colony. They're looking really good. And I didn't for many years understand all of kind of what was going on in the background and just how disruptive it can be. Like I mentioned earlier, if I was going to do a split right now and I had no choice but to do it, I would probably leave about 25 or 30% of the resources with the old queen and take about 70% to go with the new colony. Because remember, you're 44 days away from the first bee being born. So if you had a laying queen in that colony that was laying 1,500 bees a day, or I'm sorry, 1,500 eggs a day, then you're missing out on like 50, 60,000 bees because you don't have a queen that's actively producing in that colony right now. Obviously, times a year make a difference, and you're not going to necessarily have a colony that just goes crazy and raises, 60,000 bees. But what I'm getting at is there's a tremendous amount of productivity that you are completely disrupting, and everything is all about the timing, right? If you're doing that during the natural time of year when they're swarming and when they themselves are splitting in order to kind of procreate and make more colonies, then that makes a lot more sense than doing it at times when you want to do it versus kind of when nature wants to do it. Okay, the next one I have is from a young lady in British Columbia up in Canada. She has a young daughter and she's wondering what a good age is to start someone in beekeeping. So I would say my girls started, I think my oldest was about 12 when she started, and the middle one didn't want much to do with it, and my younger one, Phoebe, she was involved at a pretty young age. But what I would say is, I think as grown-ups we all know what it's like to get stung by a bee, a wasp, a yellow jacket, and you remember, like, you don't forget that as a child, and the threshold for pain for kids is much lower obviously than it is for adults. So my general recommendation on that one would be start with educational things, right? Show her some videos, and maybe if there's a local bee club or if there's any kind of like a local educational kind of thing going on, Or if you know somebody who's a beekeeper, that you can kind of be, you know, maybe 20, 30 feet away and watch a few times. Like those are, that's how I would start. And that's really kind of at any age. When it comes to actually getting into the colony, you know, getting into the hive, doing inspection, I really only think that you're limited by the child. I mean, 4 or 5 years old, if the child is capable and they're willing to listen to instructions and they're willing to take their time, then I would think it's very possible. But again, right, even with protective gear, and I've been stung a lot, and a lot of people get stung a lot with protective gear. So that's the biggest thing. That's the biggest factor, I think, that would be, you know, that would determine whether or not you'd want her to do that. But there's absolutely nothing wrong with letting her get the education and, you know, start trying to just learn more about it and see if it's something maybe she wants to do when she's older. I've got old bee suits from when my kids were little. So, I mean, I'm sure there are other beekeepers probably near you that have same situation, right, where they've got leftover things from their kids. And, you know, she can gear up and just go stand a few feet away and watch an inspection and have somebody talk through what's going on. And 90%+ of all the colonies I've ever had have been well-behaved and pretty docile. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with just kind of standing by and observing and trying to take it all in. But that's definitely a good thing, and I appreciate you encouraging her on that one. So that's awesome. Next email I have is around Varroa treatment. When should I do it? Is kind of the question there. I would say that instead of really targeting a specific time, some people say, you should do it every year at this time or whatever. Okay, but
the best thing to do and the best way to confirm undeniably where your colonies stand with regard to Varroa mites is to do an alcohol wash. Now, some people will do a dish soap wash, which is just as good. It's a lot cheaper than alcohol. You would just replace the instructions I'm about to give you in alcohol with dish soap. You just put, you know, a little bit of dish soap into a container and mix it up in the same way I'm about to describe. You can also do a sugar shake. A lot of people like the sugar shake because they say that it, air quotes, doesn't harm the bees. But it technically does. I mean, you end up shaking them around kind of violently and you end up with shaken bee syndrome. And it's just a terrible, tragic thing to have to see. But for an alcohol wash, what you're going to do is you buy an alcohol wash kit and then you're going to take a half of a cup, which is approximately 300 honeybees. You'll put that half cup of bees into that container. Now, some people will tell you to swirl it around, you know, swirl the alcohol around, not to shake it. Some people will stand there and shake violently. I myself have seen no difference in results if I take it and I shake vigorously or if I try to do the swirl technique. The trick really is to make sure that you're getting alcohol fully covered around those bees and then give a little bit of time for the mites to settle down into the area below so that you can actually count them. Now, what this is going to give you is with 300 bees, that means your mite count per 100, this is how we measure them, is per 100. So if you had 3 mites at the bottom, you would be looking at 1 per 100. My personal goal is I like to be at 2 or under for most times of year. If I'm going into the winter, I do everything I can to get them above that threshold. But I do also like to try to see if we can sometimes push the limits a little bit to see if we can work on getting some Varroa sensitivity, which is sort of a different off-topic subject. But anyway, I make the determination as to how and when I'm going to treat is strictly based on the results of the mite wash and not just the calendar or somebody said so or something like that.
I got another email where somebody said, hey, like you've mentioned, you know, quote unquote, queen rearing several times, you know, what exactly does that entail? What is that? So queen rearing is basically, the way that I do it anyway, is to take a deep, and in that deep hive body, I just load it up with nurse bees. I mean, it's basically like capped brood. You've got to pay really close attention. You don't want eggs, larvae, you know, any of that. You want nothing but capped brood on the frames that you put in there. And you completely load this thing up with nurse bees. Then you go, if you have enough resources to do this, then you go grab a couple of frames from a really strong colony and you shake more nurse bees into it. And then you close it up. You just close it up for, you know, like 2 days, put it in a cool space, you know, or, you know, a dark place for a day or so, let things settle down. And then they'll realize, oh crap, we don't have a queen. But what you're going to have is this massive, massive number of nurse bees that are ready to go to work, right? You've got frames in there that are going to have some little bit of honey in there. So they have some honey and pollen and some resources, but they are just packed with bees. And that kind of helps to simulate that environment that you would get in the spring when the population goes through the roof and it's time to swarm. And what do you have when it's time to swarm? A whole bunch of nurse bees ready to make queen cells. Then what I do is, after they've had a chance to kind of settle in for a couple of days and realize that they don't have a queen, I'll take a frame, and this frame is set up for queen cells. And what I do is I take them, they have these little cups in them, and they're nailed all across, you know, the whole tub. There's different ways of doing it. You can nail them down. You can, you know, some of them have little pieces of wood that you kind of break off. But basically what you end up with is these little cups, and you can probably do about 10 or so across each frame and three deep. So about 30 of them per frame, roughly. I've seen people do more. I've seen people do less. But I usually drop those in there for, you know, about a day or two, just so that the bees can kind of go over them and kind of polish it up and clean it up and, you know, do whatever they want to do to make sure that everything is kind of cleaned up and they're happy with it. Then you go to whatever colony that you want to go to, that you want to breed queens from. In my case, I've got like my breeder queen. She's the best one, and that's who I would use. But I would go into that colony, pull a frame out that has a bunch of very young larvae. And I mean, you're looking for a really small larva that is sitting in a pool of royal jelly. That's exactly what you want. And then as you get older, you put on some glasses. Maybe if you're young enough, you don't need to, but you put on some regular, you know, some reading glasses, or that I actually have some magnifiers that have a 3 and a 10 times lens I can drop in. But you hold the frame, put a good light on it, and you use a grafting tool. And there's a couple different ones out there that I've used. There's a bamboo one that has just this little sliver that comes out, and you can kind of slide up underneath the larva, and then you drop the larva into that little queen cup that you had put into, you know, the queen rearing deep for that day or two. So you basically drop the little larva in, you go to the next cell. You kind of scoop it out and do the same thing. There's other ways of getting them out. There's a couple different grafting tools, but you're basically, and you can watch, there's tons of videos on YouTube on how to do this. But you basically get as many of those larvae out, you know, as you can to fill up all of those grafting cells that you have in your frame. Once they're all in there, you go back to the colony, you drop that in there, and you walk away. Now, what's going to happen now is all those nurse bees that are in that colony that you've set up for queen rearing, they're going to go nuts. They're going to swarm all over those larvae, and they're going to start drawing up queen cells because they know they're queenless and they've got these larvae. It's time to go to work. They will draw everything up. They will continue to feed them. They'll create the queen cells. And then, you know, depending on how you do things and your processes, you can kind of formulate your strategy as to how you do it. Some people just leave it in the same place. You know, they come back around day 12 or 13 and they go ahead and make plans to move those cells into other colonies. Cause, you know, by day 16, you're going to get a queen. So you really want to have those queen cells out, in my opinion, 2 weeks later. So if you're doing your grafting on Saturday or Sunday, 2 weeks later, you want to be pulling those grafts out and getting them into other colonies. Another thing you can also do too, though, is you can put a queen cage around them so that in the event that you had to leave them in there for an extra day or so, they can actually be born, go into the queen cage, and just be waiting for you when you're ready to get them out. So when I say queen rearing, that's my approach. It's very effective. It gets nice, good, healthy queen cells. That's the way that I would recommend doing it. So folks, that's all I've got for today. And it's kind of a hodgepodge of information and different kind of random things, but I wanted to make sure I got to all those emails. I hope everyone enjoys the rest of the weekend. If you have any questions, please feel free to hit me up, jeff@beekeepingfornewbies.com. Take care, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon.
I know how intimidating beekeeping can be, especially in those first couple of years, and not knowing what you need, what to do, or where to find help can be downright scary. That's why I created the AI-assisted Beekeeping for Newbies mobile app to be right there with you as you start your beekeeping journey. Loaded up with checklists, guides, and one of my favorites, a bunch of queen bee photos to help you get better at locating them during inspections. I created this app to provide you with a single source to help jumpstart your learning and make you a better beekeeper. Go to studio.com/beekeeper. That's studio.com/beekeeper to take advantage of a limited time 20% off launch special.